I'm talking to Jeremy Rose for Midweek Media Watch. How's your last couple of weeks been?
Oh, it's quite good. I went up the Forgotten Highway and went to this marae called Manaariki, which has the longest miniature railway in New Zealand. But that's a story for another day. Anyway, happy May Day. Today is May Day. Do you celebrate it at all?
What, you mean dancing around a maypole?
Oh, and I meant more, you know, taking the day off work and celebrating the Workers' Day.
Oh, that. Okay. Well, it's a bit late now. I'm here.
Yeah, we're both here. But internationally, you know, it's a big deal. And I was just had a quick look, actually. The Guardian says that there'll be 20,000 people on the streets of Berlin protesting against gentrification. 7,500 police are going to be in Paris to deal with protests. CNN had a story on what 520 million Indians do to celebrate May Day. The Dhaka Tribune ran an op-ed saying it was time to pay women for unpaid work they do. But here there's virtually nothing. And the one story I did find was by Bryce Edwards, who, the political pundit, writes a column in The Herald. And he basically wrote a column that started off that way saying, look, you know, May Day just isn't an issue here, but industrial relations is becoming a big issue again. And here are some of the stories that have been written about it. He mentioned one by Gordon Campbell on the junior doctors strike, which was on his blog, Werewolf, yesterday. Other than that, that's kind of the closest we really got to it. But if our listeners want to go and read Bryce's article, they will find that it's behind a paywall now, which is, as you're probably aware, has...
Ironic.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to, the paywall will hopefully secure the work of journalists into the future.
I see.
It's been a long time coming, but it's a shock to us, I think. Have you been on the website and had a look?
I haven't.
So if you go...
had a look behind the paywall, you mean?
Yeah, well, even, I mean, if you go to the Herald now, it feels like a different paper to me, but virtually every, I mean, it's not every story, but it feels like far more stories than not, have a little yellow premium kind of sign on it. And so there's just a lot of content behind...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
..behind the paywall.
And I've just had a look now, nzherald.co.nz.
Yeah, and it's you know, and so you have to pay now $5 a week if you want to read this material. But it's had this other impact, I feel, is that when I go to it, I actually, there's a lot more there that I want to read, you know, because for a few years now, the Herald had felt, when you went to the website, probably as opposed to the newspaper, but it really felt it was pushing the clickbait. And that seems to have disappeared. And there's a lot of stories which I'm kind of wanting to click on. I haven't really had enough time to go deeply behind the paywall, but there was a story by David Fisher on a radio satellite station on the Chatham Islands, which was... bought by the French so they could use it to guide their ballistic missiles. Now, this happened in the 80s. Ironically, you had the Labour government come in with their anti-nuclear stance, but they also privatised telecom that saw an opportunity to make money. And so they kind of did this deal with the French. And it's the whole story behind that and how it was stopped and things. So that was fascinating. There's a story by Simon Collins where he goes and spends a couple of days at the garden school in Manurewa. And that's just a nice story about how, I suppose, how education is changing. And I'm
looking at the prices here. You're absolutely right when it comes to the content, because that's the reason I haven't looked at the Herald for a very long time. But it does look like it has a lot more stories. It says digital subscriptions cost $5 a week, but as a special introductory offer, subscribers will pay just $2.50 a week for the first 8 weeks. And an annual digital subscription is fixed at $199, representing a $61 saving across the year.
Yeah, so it's not insignificant, but... You know, journalism has been in crisis for so long, and there hasn't been a model. We've been hearing about the possible paywall for a long, long time. They did try it. You'll probably remember there was a time when they tried it and withdrew it very quickly, I think in the early 2000s. They're also offering limited access to a whole lot of the world's great papers, the New York Times, Washington Post, Daily Telegraph, the Times of London, Financial Times, the South China Morning Post, and the Harvard Business Review. So there's probably going to be more interesting international content. That's going to be, you know, that's a hard one because we all know we can get the whole New York Times for $1 a week, I think it is. You know, so there's already that available, and a lot of these overseas ones are available. But I'm feeling, you know,
Will RNZ pay for you, will they?
Well, yeah, I suspect they will. I would pay for this happily, actually. You know, it's one I don't pay for much. I give money to E Tangata, a couple of overseas publications. So I'm not spending a huge budget of my own on supporting our fellow journalists and broadcasters. But I think it's you know, worth doing. I was a little bit puzzled by what's behind the paywall and what's not. There's a story I saw just before I came down to talk to you on Hone Hariwera supporting Brian Tamaki, and that's free. And I think the reason that is free is because it's come from the ZB, it originated as a ZB story, and all the ZB columnists are free. But the Herald columnists you have to pay for. So Mike Hosking and Kate Hawksby and those people are free. But
that tells you something, doesn't it?
They seem to be pushing them down the agenda too, because it used to be that you'd go and they were often the lead story. And now they seem to be pushing that down a bit. I mean, it's early days. I may be wrong. That may not be what's happening. But my feeling is that they realise that stuff isn't what people want to pay for. Interesting times. There was a very interesting story today, or significant story, saying that The Guardian has made a profit for the first time in two decades. They've just been burning through money. And they're the ones who haven't put up a paywall, and they've basically are just appealing to the goodness of the hearts of their supporters and creating a sense of community.
And people are contributing.
It's working. I wonder whether that only works if you are a trust and not a profit corporation. Like, I don't know whether the Herald or the, in fact, I'd be very sceptical that a multinational corporate or a privately owned profit-driven company could build up that same amount of loyalty, but you know, I'm not sure. I'm no expert.
They are a paper worth supporting because of the quality of their journalism. But for example, giving money like that, I think I gave $30 to Wikipedia when they asked for money,
right,
because I really appreciate what they do.
Yeah, and I think people are, and I think there's a changing mindset that we're getting more used to that. You know, for paying for something simply because you support it. And obviously we get paid for, and I, you know, a lot of people I talk to tell me, but they're obviously Radio New Zealand fans, that they're very happy to pay for us through just a little bit of their taxes. You know, they seem delighted to do that. So there are different ways, but I think the Herald, you know, it's ambitious. I think we've become acclimatized to not paying for news. We're going to have staff there who is not going to be charging. So there's going to be alternatives. And so it really, I think, will depend on the quality of the reporting. But they have some very strong reporters and good writers. So if, you know, all power to them, and let's hope it works for the sake of journalism. I think, you know, it's a really important thing. There's been a few musical cheers lately, haven't there? I heard your interview with Alec Casey about John Campbell on The Breakfast Show. We've got Jack Tame has gone to Q&A. Gowan Espiner wrote his farewell piece on the RNZ website today. We'll hear Corin Dan next week. But I think you hadn't looked at any of The Breakfast at the point that
you still talked. Haven't,
you still,
actually.
You still haven't, yeah.
It didn't compel me to go and watch it, I have to say.
No, well, it's funny. When I was quite young, I was 18, I think, I met an American rabbi. I was in Israel. And I said, why did you become a rabbi? And he said, look, I had a TV in every room, including the bathroom. And in America, that means a toilet, I think. So every room. And I thought there must be more to life. And that, to me, is what I feel about breakfast TV. I just, I find it impossible to turn on the TV in the morning happily, you know, because when I turn on TV, I want to sit in front of it. And in the morning, you're doing all these things. And it just feels wrong to me. But I've had a little look, and I knew what Alex Casey was talking about. There's a certain relaxed vibe. There's some quite good interviewing going on. But, yeah, it's just, I'd have to say, it's just not for me. I don't want to watch TV at that time.
I'd probably be that relaxed too if I was earning his money.
I've got no idea
having
what he earns.
Having a great time.
But yeah, well, they certainly, you know, they certainly look like they're having fun, but it's not a place where I'd get news. I saw Jack Tame on Q&A and thought that that was kind of interesting, and but no different really, you know, it doesn't feel particularly significant. So, you know, maybe, you know, it's who cares who's sitting in the chair. It's more about whether good journalism's being done. Not sure whether a lot's changed there, really. Another development.
With their japes. It's their japes that I find a little trying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right. I'll just agree with you on that one. So this week on Radio New Zealand, a new podcast appeared on our website called The Detail, and it's part of the NZ On Air RNZ Joint Innovation Fund. So in the last budget, there was between $4.6 and $6 million put aside for this Joint Innovation Fund. And The Detail, it's called, which is 180 15-minute podcasts, is being produced by Newsroom for Radio New Zealand at a cost of $554,000. It's a daily podcast series, is how they announced it, analysing and interpreting news and current affairs stories of national significance. Now, it's very much part of an international trend. The New York Times launched one called The Daily, 2 million followers now per day, 2 million listeners a day. And that kind of, its success has spawned a whole lot of others. So I think you've got The Guardian, the CBC, BBC, NZME in New Zealand already does a similar thing. Richard Scott, who does the podcast hour on Saturday on RNZ, actually spoke to one of the producers of that last year in November. And here's what she had to say.
The Times has all these reporters. We have this built-in kind of untapped audio resource that we have experts on everything. We have experts around the world in Washington, D.C. and New York City. And right now they're just bylines on pages that people aren't necessarily paying attention to, and we want to bring them to life and hear their voices and really have them walk us through the news of the day rather than just reading the print pieces.
So yeah, have you ever listened to that? Have you heard any of those?
I haven't. I'm not really big on podcasts.
No, well,
I know people are.
I've listened to one, which was Charlotte Graham. I can't think of her. She's got a double-barreled name because she got married since she used to work here. But she reported the Christchurch Mosque for the New York Times, and so they did one with her, and so I listened to it because I knew her. Interesting, you know, going into detail about a big story. They've obviously got people all over the world. So you can be in any one place, and they've got great correspondents who go into detail. So, it's, you know, I can imagine it works really, really well. And I think that is the model which The Detail is kind of going for. So they had their first one on Monday, and it was basically on Sunday they had an insight by Giles Beckford on the alt-right. And it was really just a rehash of, you know, talking to him about how he'd done this insight. I found it pretty unsatisfactory as a podcast. It didn't really work for me. I'd already listened to the insight. Now, maybe if I hadn't listened to the insight, I would have found it more interesting. But it just didn't feel like it was a gripping enough investigation that he had done to deserve that particular treatment. The next day, they had one on the Sri Lanka terror attacks, and the associate producer of The Detail is Kathaki Masilamani. Sorry, I've butchered her name, a Sri Lankan herself. And this one was more interesting. We'll just hear a clip from that now.
I'm The Detail's associate producer, and I was born in Sri Lanka. So when news broke of the first explosion, my first thoughts were with my family in Colombo. They're Christians.
Hi.
Hi, Dashimami. How are
Hello.
You?
Hi. I'm getting on.
So my auntie sounds extremely calm. It's not that she's not scared, it's that we're so used to this. We've had 26 years of a civil war and we really know the drill.
Gee, that sounds really interesting. Worth listening to.
Yeah, no, definitely worth listening to. It's presented by Sharon Brett Kelly and Alex Ashton. They go for that very chatty kind of style and they talk, but at times it has a pre-scripted type feel, which doesn't really work for me. Today's one was with Paula Penfold, and again, it basically talked to her about a program she did last year called The Big Decision for Stuff Circuit, which was about abortion. Again, it didn't particularly, I mean, I'd watched that doco, it didn't feel like it added that much, so I wasn't quite sold on it. At $500,000, so $3,000 program, I'm yet to be convinced, but you know, it's very early days, so let's see what happens. I know we haven't got much time, so I'm wondering what we should do, actually, whether we have got time for this one. I'm kind of interested in the stories that don't make the news.
I wouldn't mind hearing this particular clip.
Yeah, okay. So there's this guy I interviewed years ago who just stays in touch, and he sent me a link to the Secretary of State and former CIA Director, Mike Pompeo. He gave a talk at Texas A&M University. Let's have a listen to that now.
We don't appreciate how glorious it is to be here in the United States of America on a consistent enough basis and with enough fervor. Maybe you do here at Texas A&M, but I think too many Americans don't understand how blessed we are. It reminds me, this is a bit of an aside, but in terms of how you think about problem sets, when I was a cadet, what's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like, we had entire training courses.
It's Mike Pompeo talking about how his job was to lie as the CIA director.
Yeah, and right. There was news out today that his boss, the President Trump, has lied or told 10,000 mistruths in his time in office. So you know, they certainly know a thing or two about lying.
Very good, Jeremy. Well, I think we have just about wrapped it up. Somebody's text to say that May Day is huge in Blackball. James Shaw is coming.
Ah.
So it's not entirely forgotten.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. I mean, that's the birth of the Labour Party and things, so that's nice to hear.
It depends where you live, I guess. All right, Jeremy, well, thank you very much, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time.
Wonderful. Hey, thanks very much.
Block, thanks for your texts about Lonnie Holly. You loved it. Come on. My thanks also to Max Rashbrook for his suggestions on how to tax the wealthy, and thanks to my producers, and thanks to you. Good night.